I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party with us on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York. Really, the rest of the country and the world, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Alex Provence, our regular contributor. He's our wine and cocktail guy. We have producer Jonathan McNichol, Christopher Prosperi, our senior contributor, who is chef and owner of Metro Beast in Simsbury, Connecticut, and our cocktail guy, Anthony DeSario of Branford, Connecticut. Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Oh, do we have some hot topics to serve up? The restaurant with no humans in sight, it's all automated. We're going to talk about that.
Cool.
Plus, and it's not a machine, you know, it's not more like a pull the lever. Plus, how rowdy should you be at a wine tasting? Wineries are trying to figure it out, and we're going to talk about it. And we're going to talk with Anthony about the opening soon of a new restaurant, Molecular Gastronomy. You're probably reading about this. This is using very high-level chemistry equipment to create amazing food experiences. And it's in the cocktail world. It's called Sticks and Stones at Mohegan Sun. It is coming soon. And Anthony's involved in that. So we're going to get the inside word on that, probably a little bit of breaking news. Here's some burger flipping advice. I don't know about you. How do you folks flip your burgers on the grill?
Use a spatula.
How often would you turn?
Once.
Yeah, and once. You know what? I'm a multi flipper. I let it sit first. The first time I let it sit for a while just to get it started, and then I am maybe it's my ADHD. But I'm a multi-flipper. I just keep rolling it over.
The crosshatch and it's like a math test for me, trying to figure out like how far I have to turn
What angle?
If you turn it too far, just get parallel
lines. Do you have tools? What are they, like a protractor and a square? It's 10 degrees.
I think it's 45.
It's a quarter turn. That's right.
So that
is
would
that
be
too much?
Like 15 minutes on the clock.
Jonathan's are one of our grill men. So here's the deal. Even though there are a lot of people who grill past Labor Day, I put my grill away, but a lot of people don't. And so we came upon advice on the smartest way to cook burgers indoors or outdoors. And that advice comes from one of the top food scientists working today, Harold McGee. And people in the food world will kind of bow down to Harold McGee. He says, Chris, you'll be interested.
Yeah, I know.
Flip them often. Every 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I had started doing this at the start of the outdoor grilling season. But then I tell myself that cooking is a lifelong pursuit. We're going to be flipping our burgers every 30 seconds in a cast iron skillet all winter long. So don't worry if you just keep learning. Making mistakes, that's how you learn.
It's funny you mentioned Harold McGee because that's where I learned it.
So what's the
point? He had an article in Gourmet Magazine like years and years ago, and he was doing a grilled leg of lamb, a small piece of grilled leg of lamb, and we had this theory of high heat, really hot, and not turning it often, just flipping it once and stuff. And he did some experimentation, and I did this at my restaurant at the time. I took two pieces of lamb, and I grilled it the way I usually grill it, really high heat, not flipping it often, just letting it cook. And I did it his method, which was lower heat. So I found a cooler place on the grill, and you just like every 30 seconds just kept moving it and moving it
What happened?
And then got them both to medium rare, and we sliced them side by side and saw the difference. And now
the
difference is that when you flip it often, you get a more even cooking. Right, so it's
more like
medium
rotisserie.
Rare, yeah, and it's right. Medium rare all the way through. You know how you get those dark lines around the outside? Uh-huh. You don't get that with his method of flipping.
So you're saying it's temperature of the meat, and what I think I want to know, and maybe other people want to know, is how does it affect caramelization on the outside
And juiciness on the inside?
Yeah, juiciness on the inside. It definitely makes it better. You get less caramelization, but like he said too, if you like that. At the end, right before you go to serve it, find the hottest part of the grill and just put it on there and get a nice sear on the outside.
Turn, the last minute.
The last minute to get that caramelization.
And
so you can
finish it with a sear?
Yeah. So that's the opposite. That's why Harold McGee is such a genius in the cooking world, because he really makes us rethink what we're doing. And if you experiment by, you know, listening to what he does, you'll see that he's right on. You know?
Well, yeah, he's, you know, we will say to each other, of course you put olive oil in the cooking water when you make pasta. And then he'll come out with something. Yeah, I'm just using an example here. And he'll say, well, actually, this is what happens chemically, and this is why you should or should not do that. So he is so interesting to read. I have his book is on my permanent food shelf.
And it's not just to read, but, you know, do like I did. Do that experiment with your hamburger. You're cooking for your family. You got two hamburgers. Do one flipping often and do one the way you usually do it with the higher heat and, you know, leaving it on there. And then you'll see the difference.
So flipping often, though, means you're involved and you're paying attention, unlike last night, because I went from lump charcoal to briquettes. Yeah. Yeah. And then I thought everything was good, and I came back and I had like the Griswold family chicken.
Smoke.
It was just like a skin. When I opened it, there was no meat left inside. Yeah. And actually, my potato looked perfect. Yeah. I was like, oh, until I grabbed it with the tongs, and it was so rock hard. I cut it in half, and just vapor comes out.
On the aside,
so I put used it as a container vapor. For
you,
butter.
You invited us all over for
that's
lunch
molecular
after,
gastronomy.
And,
there you go. Okay. All right. So it's time for our food news cruise. This is where we salute our colleagues for tips and treasures. And first, what a terrific idea from Julissa Roberts at Fine Cooking Magazine. In the current issue, she says, see what you think about this. She says she is making, in terms of seasonal ingredients, a sausage and grape sandwich. And I'm quoting her. She says, cook Italian sausage links until they're almost done, then slice them. Saute those slices with thinly sliced onions, garlic, and olive oil until the onions are tender and the sausage is cooked through. Toss in halved grapes. They're fresh in the market. Put the mixture on a roll with crumbled gorgonzola.
Oh, my God. That sounds so good.
That does sound
good.
Is that
great? That is Julissa Roberts. So you could fool with that any way you want. Do you want to toast the bread? You could do that. Do you want to add a little chopped lettuce? You could do that. But
tomatoes.
Wonderful to have. You would add that with the grapes, Alex? Mm. Yeah. So
see, I like that idea instead of, because I don't really go for the caramelized onions, but that would be a great way to add that sweetness.
The grapes.
Okay. And thank you, Cooks Illustrated, for testing inexpensive chef's knives. They looked at the following things: blade design, how it feels, the handle, how it feels in your hand, that matters when you're slicing and chopping and doing a lot of that stuff. How the knife performed while you are slicing and dicing, and how it kept its sharp edge. The winner is, you want to make a guess, Chris? Do you want to make
is
a guess?
Is it an American knife?
It is.
Dexter. Huh.
No, it's Victorinox.
Ooh,
aren't they American
now?
No,
they're
Swiss.
They're Swiss, but I think they're made here now. I think they're made
here. So it's the Victorinox. By the way, everything we've talked about is on our website, foodschmooze.org. Victorinox 8-inch Swiss Army, I love this, Fibrox chef's knife.
And how much?
You just make up words, I think. It's $27.
Does it come with a corkscrew?
You know,
it comes with
does it have the screwdriver and the
corkscrew,
flashlight,
okay.
Toothpick. It's got the poultry shears.
That's not a bad idea, actually. You should send that to them. They should totally have an 8-inch chef knife, and in the handle should be all the other tools.
An oxygen mask. One more. Connecticut Magazine just did a feature on the new barbecue joint that's getting rave reviews. It's only been open since Memorial Day. That's not very long in restaurant terms, and they are slammed just off of Route 7 in Ridgefield, Connecticut. The joint is called Hoodoo Brown. And the story says that they're doing all kinds of barbecue styles, Texas, Carolina, Kansas City, borrowing from all of them. Don't you think we have to try this?
Yeah, barbecue's big again in Connecticut. There's a lot of new places opening up.
There's Bears in Hartford. So many.
Yeah, there's,
but
barbecue's
talking about
now.
The ones that have the most publicity. Yep. Do you remember the guy in Stratford who did the most amazing barbecue? And I used to drive at the drop of a hat to Stratford, Connecticut. Wow. He bought an old you know, A-frame Howard Johnson's thing.
No way. Wow.
And was doing, bringing the wood in from Georgia.
Like and hickory. And
40 hours in the barbecue in the yard. Yeah. And I would be in line with lots of guys from the area factories because it was kind of in a factory zone. Yeah. Oh, was that really something?
I'll drive for good barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
I follow my nose. You can, like, smell the, the wood wafts through the air. It's like, where is that coming from?
There is still so much local produce fresh from our farms, right, Chris?
Oh, my gosh.
It just doesn't
get
fresher. No. We know that the tomatoes were a little funky this year, and so they, not that they've entirely disappeared, but a lot of the heirloom. But right now, I just want to say thank you to our farmers, our farm families, the farm hands, because zucchini is still there. It tastes like itself. It doesn't taste like cardboard. The eggplant is still firm and delicious. Cantaloupe, still watermelon, those grapes we mentioned, the greens, and corn is out there.
And stuff is coming, right? Get excited for what's around the corner. All the winter squash and pumpkins.
Farmers are so happy this time of year.
Yeah.
You go to their farm stands, their smiles from ear to ear.
Yeah. Time to rest.
Yeah, that's probably what it is.
Oh, here's Alex. He has no cash. Yeah.
Okay. We have a cocktail coming your way. It is a special one because Anthony DiSerio is here. We're going to take a break in about 30 seconds, but I wanted to let you know that on the other side of this break, stay tuned. Because not only are you going to hear this cocktail being made live on the air, we've also got a great wine for you. This is a summer red, but also a fall red. So this will be good chilled right now, also with a little chill on it for Thanksgiving. Yes, it's not too soon to think about that. And affordable at $20 a bottle. We usually try to do around $15, but for Thanksgiving, we can spark that up about $5. Anthony's going to make that cocktail and he's going to reveal something about the new restaurant that is coming at Mohegan Sun, and it's involving molecular gastronomy and a cocktail bar that does the same thing. This is going to be wild, so stay with us. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on The Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be
ready. I'll be ready
tomorrow night.
I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
That's what Beans said to Cornbread.
I'm Faith Middleton. If you're in the car right now with a grown-up, I know that is your favorite song, and we wouldn't think of changing it. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Brosberry of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Eugene Amatruda, our regular contributor Alex Province, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. Our cocktail guy, regular contributor Anthony DiSerio, is with us. And by the way, we thank you for listening to the show. You have a seat at the table, and thanks for having a good time with us. First, this news, Open Table just named its list of the top 100 best restaurants for foodies in America. And Connecticut's only top honor went to the Mediterranean-centric restaurant in New Haven. Congratulations to the
Congratulations.
Very nice.
Wow.
That puts us on the map, doesn't it?
They've put us on the map before.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are thrilled for them. But you know, this area, are we lucky in terms of our restaurants? From the most humble to the fanciest, we are people. When I bring people here from New York, they are knocked out.
Great ingredients.
So, and New York includes our audience, so that's a funny thing to say. But you know, we think of New York, people are traveling from around the world to get there and try the food there, just as when we go to Paris and San Sebastian in Spain and Treviso, Italy, you know, all these places that we all travel to. And here we are. We're just so lucky to have what we have.
On all levels.
Yeah. All right.
We get all those great locations coming here, you know, being the melting pot and being America. So we have French and Spanish and, you know, Italian, and everything is all right here.
And that reflects what's going in at the bar, right, Cocktail Man?
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
This is Anthony DiSerio. So here we go. Anthony, before we get to your cocktail, we're going to surprise people about what this is. It's all on our website, foodschmooze.org. Anthony, you're now the bar manager at a restaurant that is just about to open. It is coming soon.
Coming soon to, yes, to Mohegan Sun. Yes.
Mohegan Sun. And this is going to be called Sticks and Stones. They've been working on this for quite some time. It is an independent restaurant. In other words, this is Mohegan Sun's own restaurant, its own concept. And what we're intrigued with is that this involves, in a major way, molecular gastronomy. This is food chemistry equipment,
yes,
crossed with traditional techniques and non-traditional techniques. It all comes down to, is it good? This is going to happen in the restaurant, and it's going to happen at the bar where you are.
Yes.
So let's talk first about Sticks and Stones in terms of cocktails. What's it going to be like, this molecular gastronomy?
It's mind-blowing. You know, I'm really excited to take things to a level that I've never really had the opportunity to experiment with. Our bar manager is Ryan Henry, forgive me, Tunnicliffe from England. He's just a brilliant chemist, mixologist, understands what's happening in the glass beyond anything I've ever seen or anyone I've ever met in this industry.
Are you telling me that he understands not only the chemistry of this, using this new equipment, but he understands, most important, flavor?
Absolutely.
Flavor combinations that,
yes,
you will say, this is mind-blowing,
yes,
no matter what form,
yes,
it comes
and
in.
And we're going to take your regular cocktails and we are going to blow your minds with them using...
Well, give me an example.
The first day I met him, he said, I need the largest can of nitrogen I can find and we need a centrifuge as soon as possible. And so we're going to be using something, it's not quite new, but it's new to our area, where we're going to be doing clarified juices, where we take our simple daiquiri with would have lime juice in it. We're going to put that in the centrifuge, clarify it, and you're going to take those particles out that add the color and add the texture, and you're going to have a creamier drink, sweeter drink, more flavors that are going to pop. Using things like saline, like you would put salt in your food, if you add saline or salt to your cocktail, that's also going to make these flavors really burst.
Wow. This is fascinating.
Things like using,
I'm ready for a cocktail.
using nitrogen to basically freeze dry mint. So when we muddle it into...
It fractures.
It's just amazing how the flavors are going to come out instead of dissipate when you use them fresh.
And do we know what it looks like yet, the atmosphere?
The atmosphere is... It's state-of-the-art. It's just absolutely beautiful inside, like all modern colors. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just,
and
it's going to have to be seen to be believed. It really
is. We don't
is.
Have a date yet on opening.
No, but we are very, very, very close.
Okay.
Yes.
Cannot wait to try this. This is really going to be fun.
Opening night?
We're going to see you. Oh, yeah. We're going to be there. Okay, Anthony, let's make a cocktail right here live on the air.
All right.
By the way, we have coming up for you a discussion about a couple of things, as I mentioned. Restaurants with no humans in sight. This is kind of interesting in a particular way. Also, how rowdy are you allowed to get at a wine tasting?
Uh-oh.
Wineries are having, you know, the tasting rooms, they're having to deal with this. How do we do this? So we're going to get to those discussions. Go ahead, Anthony. What are you going to make?
So what we're going to make today is actually, having gone down to Tales of the Cocktail this summer as well, where the home of the cocktail, you know, the American cocktail was made. And it's down in New Orleans. And what I did was I wanted to take it...
This is the Dale DeGroff thing.
It's Dale DeGroff, Ann Tenenbaum, pretty much anybody who's touched a cocktail.
We call it the Cocktail Museum.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. He does have the Museum of the American Cocktail down there as well.
Yeah. Okay, so
what I'm going to do is a twist on the old-fashioned. It is an old-fashioned cocktail by definition, being spirit, sugar, and bitters.
And this is on our website right now, foodschmooze.org. Anthony DiSerio, go ahead. We're going to mix right here live on the show.
So what we're doing today is a rum old-fashioned. You know, most people are used to you like your bourbon old fashioned.
Yeah, I do.
I like my rum.
You could, and you like your rum. So we have the Pirate XO Reserve from Patron Spirits. It's a blended rum, all aged in limousine casks. So I would
Can I do full disclosure? Because I know you are also an ambassador for them.
Yes, I am.
Okay, so I just want to be fair to everybody. Okay, go ahead.
So we have the Pirate Rum from Patron Spirits. I like to use an aged spirit when I'm making any type of an old-fashioned, just because of the barrel aging and the extra flavors, that's where the bitters is going to come involved. So we did about 1.5 to 2 ounces, depending on how much you like your rum.
You've got that old school glass shaker in front of you.
So I have a glass shaker. I like to use glass. You can use your metal tin if you like. The metal tin will get your drink colder faster. And then I did 1 ounce of simple syrup, which is 1/2 cup of sugar to 1/2 cup of hot water. Stir it, let it melt, put it in your refrigerator, let it sit. It'll last for months.
Okay, very good. So, and you can use any rum you have,
You
by
can
the
use
way.
Any rum. Any, I just say any aged rum, any like 3-year rum, 5-year rum, any dark rum.
Okay.
You can use, you know, any dark rum. Just want to stay away from that, the clear rum. But you could if you like. And then to spice things up, we took the spices of the cocktail world. In your spice cabinet, you have all types of things.
What's in this one?
This one I used a walnut bitters.
All right. Now, here you use Fee Brothers. That's what I use too often. You can find Fee Brothers bitters in all flavors. These are in a lot of liquor stores now. So let me just, before you start, I know you're getting, go ahead. You've got your ice going.
It's okay.
Okay. And while you're doing that, I'm going to put a drop on the back of my hand, as you advise, Anthony. Walnut bitters.
It is bitter. It's going to mellow out for
you. That is really intense, and you're right. It's mellowing out. It almost tastes like coffee as it settles on your tongue.
Okay. And
here is another one while
up.
I'm doing it. Okay, you're stirring the rum old-fashioned.
Because you always want to stir your spirits.
This is Aztec chocolate bitters, and I'm going to do a drop on the back of my hand to taste. Of this? Well, okay, I'll do 2 drops because it's chocolate.
It's very bitter.
Oh, yeah.
I always say bitter is the flavor we love to hate.
That is fantastic.
So, no, you've had an old-fashioned before.
I have.
Imagine something like that with a bourbon, with the chocolate and bourbon.
So you're stirring with a stirrer. We're not shaking this. What's the rule in cocktail making?
In cocktail making, when you're using all spirits to make your drink, you want to stir them till they're nice and cold. Too cold to hold, as we say. And if you're using anything with citrus and sugar, you want to shake things up.
Citrus shake.
Citrus shake, spirit stir.
Okay, go ahead. Cool. Pouring it into our glasses.
So we're just going to pour into our glasses, and then we're just going to garnish this with a little orange zest. Spritz the orange over the top.
Right on the top? Okay. Oh, that looks good. So I'm going to try this as this gets passed around.
You know, fall season coming up, it's still, you know, it's nice and cool at night, but still hot in the day by the fire pits.
Can I just tell you, that is one of the best cocktails I've had in a long time.
Thank you.
That is fantastic.
So clean. Delicious.
It's so easy. It's 3 ingredients.
There was nothing.
This is how it all started.
Like, I can make that cocktail.
You must go to the website. Okay. My friends, I encourage you to go foodschmooze.org and look up Anthony DeSerio's, his old fashioned, his rum old fashioned. Absolutely crazy delicious.
You could just call it the old fashioned pirate.
I like it. The old fashioned pirate.
You'll see it under that name.
The peg leg?
Call it that too.
Really good.
A few of these you might have one before the night. So
That is a great cocktail.
Fabulous.
Yeah. And as easy as it was to make.
Does that go in a martini glass or not?
You can serve them up chilled if you like, but normally I like to serve it over a nice big block of ice.
Oh, that is so
and then
good.
And the ice will slowly really start mellowing out those bitters again, and it'll get softer and easier to drink as the night goes on.
Fabulous.
It's great for a conversation with
a nice cigar. Maybe as an aperitif because of the bitters, just sort of like Aperol gets you
thirsty.
Oh,
yeah.
Hungry. Great idea.
Yeah, it is one of those great pre-dinner and post-dinner cocktails.
Thank you so much, Anthony DeSerio. And again, we're looking forward to Sticks and Stones at Mohegan Sun. Thank you for the inside info on that. And we will be there for this opening. Okay, Alex Province, before we get to our big discussion, you have got a redo of Restaurant Leftovers to make a meal. And I thought this was wonderful. This is on our site, too. You can do this recipe at home with any pasta leftovers that you might have. So explain what happened.
We always end up with a ton of leftovers and always keep them until we end up throwing them out. And I hate throwing away food. So the thought was, we had this beautiful bolognese And to make it appetizing, we ended up just sautéing it in a saucepan with some olive oil, some garlic, threw the pasta in, then took a ceramic mini pan, poured the pasta in. Matt took an old frozen baguette, put it in the food processor with like a block of Parmesan cheese and some like flat leaf parsley, put it on top, threw the whole thing into the oven, you know, half hour, whatever. It was bubbly hot and it just tasted, it was delicious. It was a way of eating something that we probably would have ended up throwing away.
So this was probably a day. Yes, Chris, probably a day from goodbye.
Yeah.
Goodbye bolognese.
Good way to bring
it normally back. I leave my leftovers like on the top of the car or in the back seat the next morning, but if it makes it home.
That's a good way.
So that recipe, how to do that, is on our website, foodschmooze.org. I now live in two places, in Connecticut and Orient on the North Fork of Long Island. And if I look across the water when I'm in Orient, I can see the Saybrook Lighthouse and I feel like I could touch it. It is that close the water. I mean, you could practically, you feel like you could throw a rock and hit that. It's unbelievable. So whether you're visiting Long Island's East End or you live there, mark your calendars because Love Lane First Fridays begins on Love Lane in Matatuck, New York. You're invited to stroll the charming streets, sipping, tasting, browsing. First Fridays, October 2nd, November 6th, December 4th, 6 to 9 p.m. In East End restaurant news, American Beach has opened in Greenport. The vibe is terrific. The food is very good. There's an inn attached, and from what we're hearing, Brooklyn hipsters are starting to grab up Greenport houses. For visitors who've never been, the South Fork of Long Island, as you know, is recognized as the Hamptons. The North Fork, they're side by side. It's like Sonoma in the old days, ungentrified for the most part, lined with farms and farm stands and vineyards on or near the bay and Long Island Sound. All the vineyards have tastings. We're going to get to that subject in a minute. There are car ferries from Connecticut to Long Island in New London and Bridgeport. That, of course, is also on our website. Okay, so there are wineries I have tried there. I'm in love with our wineries here in Connecticut. I love this local wine movement. Here's one vineyard to talk about on the east end of Long Island, and it is in Southold, which is just when you cross over on the ferry. It's right there on the North Fork, and it's called One Woman Wines and Vineyard.
Cool.
And
name.
It's a very simple looking place, and I pulled in just because it was charming. Yeah. And I find a woman named Claudia Parita, who is from Calabria, Italy, and she is completely the wine is in her family. Her father Domenico had taught her to value the land, the fruit it provides, the satisfaction that you find in working hard, the purpose of mind. And so she moved to Long Island, spent several years in the restaurant industry, and then wanted to return to her roots. She bought this property and started growing grapes, and it is very good wine. You can go to a tasting there. Again, it is very simple. You probably won't see Claudia because she's famous for not being interested in publicity, which makes it all the more interesting. But she's making such great wine. She doesn't care about that stuff. Yeah. She wants to be in the field, attending her grapes, watching them carefully, appreciating what they're doing, and making sure that it's all turning out right. So that is called One Woman Wines and Vineyards. And Claudia, I have great respect for what you do. You can go online to onewomanwines.com if you're over on the North Fork of Long Island. Very quickly, the corn is still with us, and I can't be happier about that. You know, you can take it off the cob and put it in a plastic bag and freeze it for use
it in
later.
February.
Exactly. Why buy that corn that's tasteless? This will have taste. You don't need to cook it, right, Chris?
No, just take it off and throw it in a bag.
So cut it with a knife?
Cut it with a knife off the cob, dump it in a bag. Seal it and date it.
And save the cobs, though, right? So we can make soup.
Yeah, we make stock with the cobs.
How long date it? Because how long can we have it in there?
It never lasts more than by the spring for me. It's all gone.
Because you eat it, though.
Because and any snowy day, you bring that out, and it's like heaven. And I have to say, I've been doing your favorite way of doing it and just caramelizing it in a pan.
Oh,
that's heaven.
That is.
It is heaven.
Emily Olshansky and Roma Baron do this. You know, I've learned learned to do it. I can't quite do it as well as they do. Good. They just let it sit for a long time. Yeah. I turn it too soon, so it doesn't get as much caramelization as they get. They put in lots of butter and
it's
salt.
Heaven.
Down in Mexico, they ferment it and they make a drink called tequina.
Nice.
It was it's ridiculously good. It is so good.
Really?
It's this sweet, creamy cocktail.
Let's try that.
And actually, I'm working on fermenting some
how
now.
I got a recipe.
It's basically, you know, you're just adding your sugar to your
sugar.
Grain, and you're just going to let that sit, strain it out, and add a little bit of the simple syrup, and let it sit for a couple days, and then just drink it up with a little lime sorbet.
Mm-hmm. I want to tell you that if you go to our website right now and you click on crab and corn cakes with lime sour cream, this is the last of the corn, it will take you right to Fine Cooking Magazine. They are the folks who did this recipe. It's a Tex-Mex treatment. It is very simple to do. You just need lump crab meat and some corn kernels, eggs, some lettuce, fresh cilantro, lime, a little sour cream, a touch of oil, and there you go. What a delicious crab cake this is. So it's on our website right now. Hot topics coming up. What a wild discussion we have coming your way. Please support your local food growers and food makers. I know you know that. Find the food, wine, recipes, cocktails we feature right now or anytime online at foodschmooze.org. More delicious conversation after this quick break. Please stay with us.
Out of the black, skipping the track, taking it back. I make a bid for the metal. Rough rot like a cosmonaut. I got shunned for the roof on. You're restless in your best dress. I'm depressed at your swank address. Live in the machinery. Salt sea of the hex. Hellbounds around the compound, make the word swell in the villanelle. Ah well, you got the dweller, dispeller, tremble when you disassemble. Scrawl a rough map on the fool's cap. Mr. Weinstein drinking a strike nine, that's why I compel you to swim the wishing well. Steam it like a vegetable, green like a vegetable, burn it like a vegetable.
She don't look like a mother, nothing like a father. How else can you explain? It must be something in the water. Pigtails, overalls, freckles on the face. Skinny as a toothpick and turned sideways. Something happened to her when she turned 16. From a little Dixie chicken to a Mississippi queen. Hey, hey.
Yeah, we love that. I'm Faith Middleton. Thank you, Jonathan McNichol. With the gang, this is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, and on podcast all over the world. Of course, New York includes the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search the Faith Middleton Show. We're going to have two conversations. These are hot topics that are happening right now, especially in the food world, but maybe at your dinner table. These hot topics are restaurants of the future. In other words, all automated. There's not a human in sight. The other topic, how raucous should you be at a wine tasting? And as we begin that conversation, don't forget popovers all over the place. It's the new thing at restaurants and bakeries. We know because Popover Bistro and Bakery in Simsbury sent a whole batch with Chris to the show, and we've been eating them with a honey butter. We love popovers on the show. Thank you so much, Popover Bistro in Simsbury. And we know a lot of you restaurants are doing this. It's absolutely thrilling. If you want to make it at home, it's the easiest thing in the world. Okay, my popover pan is well worn. All right. So here's the deal. The New York Times, about a week ago, did a piece online about the restaurant of the future. So they send a writer to San Francisco, and there is a quinoa restaurant, which is nothing new for San Francisco. She said the restaurant Itza, this story is on our website with an essay from me about what we're going to talk about. this place is fully automated. There's not a human being in sight. Things are coming on conveyor belts. You press this, you punch that.
There's customers, all right?
She's, listen to this. Last week, I was in a fast-moving line. I browsed on a flat-screen monitor the menu of 8 different quinoa bowls. They cost about $7. Then I approached an iPad where I tapped in my order, customized it, and paid. My name was taken from my credit card. It then appeared on another screen, and when my food was ready, a number showed up next to it, and that corresponded to a cubby where my food would soon appear. The cubbies are behind transparent LCD screens that go black when the food is deposited, so no signs of human involvement are visible. With 2 taps of my finger, my cubby opened and my food was waiting. And she said the quinoa, actually, which was stir-fried with arugula, parsnips, and red curry, tasted quite good. But boy, you can imagine what this is causing. Now, if you look at my essay online, you will see me saying, how old are you, writer? Because when I was young, my mother took me, Chris, Horn and Hardart.
Yeah, the automat.
It's the same
But it was all pre-made stuff, right?
And it was shiny.
It wasn't, it wasn't quinoa.
And it wasn't quinoa.
So I talk online about this experience of going to Horn and Hardart as a kid and how you can still, at antique shows, buy that, you know, the equipment from that place. Which is,
so who's making the food?
It's all done behind the scenes. It's,
well, yeah, just like at Horn and Hardart. So this is, on the one hand, this is not new. But on the other hand, what does this mean? Is it something that's going to grow? Is my theory expressed recently and ridiculed true? Are they going to use drone delivery at restaurants to come to your apartment? I still think it's going to happen. You know, what does this mean? Chris, you're in a restaurant.
Yeah. Don't you like the people?
See, I don't know. So, I read an article, and I'm trying to remember where it was, about one of the big software companies testing out software for cooking. And that being part of our future. Basically what they're saying is
like the Jetsons.
So basically the robot can already the robot already has, right, in this day and age, it has the ability to cook, right? We can make a robot to cook, but we don't have the software yet to actually get it to cook well. And there are companies working on that right now, making software for the robot to actually cook well and to learn from its cooking, I guess. So maybe we're not maybe it's not that far away where you'll walk in and it will be that automated where you'll see robots.
And who do you complain
you.
To? It's like complaining to Siri. Sorry.
Yeah, you would complain to Siri. And how does that work for you?
That's how it learns from our feedback, our complaints.
What's my name?
So I mean, I don't know, maybe it is. We don't know what the future is going to be, but I can see definitely some things being done like this.
What are we balancing here? Because on the one hand, we have the idea that we want to stay open to change. The world is always changing. We want to stay flexible and open to change on the one hand. On the other hand, we want to stay connected to human touch. Where do we carve this out?
And the artistry of cooking as well. I mean, it's like having a robot do art. Right? I mean, you're an artist.
Or an
you're
elephant.
A chef.
No. Well, see, I don't think
Well, they actually do pretty good art.
There is an elephant doing painting.
I don't know. You're asking questions we don't have the answers to yet.
That is our job.
Yeah, right. Is the software eventually going to be to that point? And everyone is saying yes.
If Watson software, can win.
Yes. Sure. The software will get someday to the point where it will be able to cook as well as a human. It's quite possible.
But even if it is if they cook as well as a human, do you still want to eat food from a robot rather than a person?
I don't know. I think they'll always be. I think, don't we always go off in those two directions where we love, right?
But someone's got to program the machines. Yes. I mean, someone's got to come up with the menu for the robot to make.
And I don't think, and we've learned this in our history, I don't think if you take the human out of a certain aspect, it takes all of it away. Like Anthony just said, someone actually has to build the robot. Someone actually has to program the software.
And when they don't work, you don't eat.
But
they won't go on strike, right? I don't know.
Think of the jobs that would disappear, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, they say that there will still be special restaurants, in quotes, where there are actual human beings serving you, but it will be a kind of high-level special experience for people.
Like what you were saying, Anthony, a chef is creating a a menu, and then this robot is just making a facsimile of what he created.
Just going through the motions.
Because they're not going to be coming up with their own recipes.
You don't know 100 years from now. I don't know. I mean, who knows where software is going. But as a chef, you strive for consistency. Mm. And in that respect, once you get a recipe perfectly done, if you could get someone or something, a machine, to actually make that recipe exactly the same way every single time, then you've reached what every chef strives for.
That's interesting.
And that is total consistency.
I thought you're not coming into work.
No, I mean, no, just no, full consistency.
But in the total consistency, you do not make mistakes. Yeah. You do not then
grow.
Discover.
Yeah.
In the mistake, you may discover something that takes you to a new level. The machine is going to be doing the same exact thing over and over and over again.
It almost makes me feel like that it's going to turn me into the machine and be like, this is all you can have. This is the drone.
Thank
just
you,
eat
Hal.
The gel.
Yeah, exactly.
Just eat the gel.
Just eat. Yeah, here you go. Yeah.
All right,
Soylent Green. Here you go.
It's good. What happens if it's a
this
bad
could be
egg?
A whole
How's
show.
I know it could.
This one could be a whole
all
show.
All right. But we have to change topics because these are hot topics. And the other one is, how raucous should a wine tasting be? I bring this up because I don't know if you saw it, but there was a story in the Times and many other news outlets about the Napa Valley Wine Train, which takes you on these various tastings. There are buses here in our region that do this at vineyards in New York and Connecticut. And there was a group of people, and they were very rowdy and loud. Some people objected. They ended up getting thrown off the train. This was a
while
book.
It was moving.
This was a no. This was a book okay. group, and these wow. this was a group of African American people. It became so complex in terms of race and gender and what you can do and can't do and how much space do you own when you're in a shared space. Oh, my goodness. Fascinating to have happened. But, how raucous do you get to be at a – Chris, you have a restaurant. In a restaurant, at a wine tasting in particular, where the wine probably loosens you up, how loose do you get to be? Anthony, you're at bars. You know, Alex, we've been to professional wine tastings.
Sure.
I've got an essay online right now about what happened to me at my first professional wine tasting, and it is quite something. And that's at foodschmooze.org right now online.
But to your point, it's not done on purpose, I don't think. A lot of times people are, used to having a glass or two of wine at home, and then all of a sudden they're at a wine tasting and there's 50 whatever bottles of wine to taste, and it loosens your inhibitions. And I don't think people are purpose. I'm sure the next day they're like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe I was on the chandelier." Did I buy any wine? I hope.
Okay, but in addition to that, how rowdy do you get to be at any wine tasting, even a small one with 8 wines, or in a restaurant? We all know what it's like to look over your shoulder at somebody who's piercing, or a group of people piercing, because they're invading your fun and conversation. You can't even hear yourself. And perhaps people have been looking at us when we've been with friends and we're having a whopping good time. So how do we handle this?
That's a tough one, and especially because everyone's idea of a ruckus is different. Right, like what you just said it perfectly. Like someone could be looking at you because you don't think you're making a ruckus, but maybe to another group of people, you and your friends having a heated debate at a table could be too loud for them.
Or laughing hysterically,
as
you do.
Yeah, I don't. I mean,
laughing's okay.
8 people laugh.
Yeah, laughing
well,
is okay, but if it's too loud, it comes down to 3 words: responsible alcohol service. When we do tastings and you've poured, we're only allowed to pour like maybe an ounce and a half, like legally.
Yeah.
Having a designated person with you, maybe because someone's got to drive home after this. So there's that one person who maybe knows that my group's getting a little embarrassing right now. And maybe I should try and calm my friends down because people are looking at us.
They spilled the spilled
so
the
so not words, only but, a, I mean, not only a designated driver, but a designated social monitor.
Yeah.
Something
what you're calling
for. It can be done. You can have a great time without getting out of hand. Last June, for example, I mean, you threw the party of the decade, and we really had no problems. I mean,
you mean martini?
Your martini competition. We had how many people?
Almost
there?
1,000.
Almost 1,000 people, and people just had a good time. And there were a lot of martinis being poured.
We did some wild dancing,
and but they were still regulated to how much was to be poured and how much could be served, and there was food available. So it's both responsibilities, the group going and the group holding it.
So what happens with too much alcohol? Obviously, your inhibitions, as you talked about, Alex, kind of fade away, and you don't realize how loud you're being.
That's really
what it is. So who's in charge?
The winery wants to have
person pouring it.
I like what he said about having that designated person, maybe Anthony? before you go, right? Before you go out, saying to the designated driver, if you have one, say, listen, can you just keep an eye on us too? Like if we get a little out of hand to
it's
just
easier
keep
said
us
than done, though, yeah, when you're with is, people yeah. that are drinking.
Yeah, because you're still outnumbered.
Yeah. And we all
you
have,
guys are a little loud now all of a sudden.
And we all have stories of trying to calm a friend down, right, when they drank too much in the past. I'm sure we all have stories about that. And I'm sure, you know, because inhibitions do go away.
Yeah.
You know, there's no.
Alex is like, oh, wait, that Alex. Alex is like, oh my God, don't tell that story, Chris.
So there's no difference in this conversation from the one I had with the psychologist at Yale who specializes in the class of the connection between animal and human being sexual response. It is the most subscribed to course at Yale. She's brilliant. She's been on the show many times, and she said, our job is to think, how do we get to people who are doing what they're doing sexually before the brain takes over, and how do we get the message we're trying to deliver about responsible and irresponsible sex to these people while their brains are operating in an optimal way? It's the same with alcohol. Yeah. How do you, you know,
you
how do we
place
do this?
Where maybe there's no turning back.
Yeah, well, is there a game plan before you go out? Yeah. You know, I think
a discussion.
Yes. I mean, some people go out, and we do. We've all had our nights where, like, you know, you go out, you're on a mission. You know, I'm going to have a really good time tonight. You know, I'm going to dance like nobody's watching, and unfortunately, everybody's watching. Or you have the nights where it's like, you know, I just want to go out and enjoy a nice glass of wine and just taste and just taste have a relaxing day.
So but tastings are supposed to, I mean, they're designed to go through. Someone has worked very, very hard to produce this wine, invites you to come in to taste so that you respectfully go through and taste all these different wines that they've made. And, you know, and politely you're supposed to sip and then spit and use a spit bucket. And you can practice with water at home. But the idea is it's not an open bar. You're really going and tasting a sip and spitting it out, tasting another. And at the end of it, deciding if there's any wine that you like that you want to buy or remember to buy.
That's exactly
right. It's less of a party.
And here's the parallel. It would be like going into an art show and saying, you know, hi, that's an interesting painting. I really love that. This will be funny. And then squirting a bottle of mustard at the painting. It's the same thing. Yeah. You know, as Alex says, this is somebody who's made something in an artful way for your pleasure. But, you know, so what's respect?
But unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people think of wine like that. Right? I think a lot of people don't think of wine and spirits and stuff like that. I think a lot of people think, like what Anthony said, that I'm going to go out and my mission today is to go out and have a blast. And it's not about those fine things. And sometimes that involves going to a wine tasting, you know? And then I guess there are different mindsets
and the
that
wineries
people have
want
when they go out.
They want you to have a good time, but they want you also to understand what they're doing.
But you are in somebody's home. You're in somebody else's home.
When you're at a wine tasting. Especially when you're in Napa Valley. You're in there.
Well,
right?
Here, all these wineries in Connecticut.
Sure. All the wineries in Connecticut.
In New York. And no matter where you're listening from right now, we have listeners in Jerusalem and England.
But I've been to wineries, even in Connecticut, where I've been like, ooh, I'm going to step back a little bit and wait for this group to leave because they're getting a little out of hand.
Yeah, so how do we do this? How do you have a good time? What's the limit? somebody be in charge. Maybe that's the thing. Anyway, I hope that starts a conversation around your table. Thank you, everybody. Alex Province and Chris Brassberry, Jonathan McNichol, and Anthony DeSerio. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Of course, we're online anytime, including right now, for all our wines, cocktails, recipes, and food news. Go to foodschmooze.org. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.